Well, hello friends, here we are again. This is Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 158A, and we're on page 670 in the book, in the appendix, and looking through various important collections concerning the planets and the constellations as gathered from the Secret Doctrine and also from Cosmic Fire. We've been dealing with the Sun, basically, and the collections from the Secret Doctrine. We continue with that. The seven rays of the sun are made parallel to the seven worlds of every planetary chain and to the seven rivers of heaven and earth. Now remember, the word planetary chain here may really be a substitute for the word scheme. In Theosophy, the word chain may mean essentially scheme. The sun is Apollo. He has a seven-stringed harp. The chariot of the sun also has seven horses. The seven rays, in a way, emanate from the sun. They have to pour through the sun as the great transformer and are distributed into the solar system. So, and every ray is associated with one of the seven dimensions, one of the seven planes of the cosmic physical plane, and also with the subplanes. So the river, the idea of the river, is the stream of force. It's not literally water, of course. A stream of force emanating from the sun and also really from the seven subtle principles of the sun, really emanating from the subtle principles of the solar logos. Okay, so whenever we're dealing actually with the second ray per se, it is under that ray that the rays per se are studied. Under the third ray, astrology is studied. So the seven ways of light must wean away the attention of the scholar from all that has been found and stored and used. This is in the Law of Repulse for the second ray, and the method of learning for the second ray is via these seven great energies. Thus, there is a connection between the two and the seven. The seven rays of the sun will expand at the final pralaya into seven suns and absorb the material and whole universe. This is interesting. I ran into something the other day which I thought was significant. And it had to do with this particular chart. And I thought, are there seven suns? If there are seven suns, this may be the way they look. And I'm not specifically talking about the seven sacred planets. I'm talking about the persons of the Trinity, 1, 2, and 3, which I suppose are the first, second, and third logos. But surrounding them, if there's an analogy to the way the esoteric Buddhas or the esoteric Kumaras operate, we'll have the central one, who is Sanakumara, surrounded by six, and we'll have the central one, who is the solar logos, also surrounded by six. And these can be the seven suns, which dematerialize at the end and burn up the whole. The final pralaya, I suppose this means for any solar system. We have another one coming, and we are said to have seven solar systems altogether, but in occultism there is this way of counting the many as the one. So if we've had six solar systems in total, they will be counted as another one in the eternal now. So there's the expansion into seven suns, and the rays themselves seem to expand into seven suns, or seven glorious demonstrations of ray quality, and absorb the material of the whole universe. And by universe, we have to be careful again, by universe we mean the entire solar sphere, but by no means the entirety of the cosmos. That would be an impossibility. So there is this absorption that occurs at the end of every incarnation of a solar logos. And let's see, there's other places where the seven sons are mentioned. This is at the final pralaya, and I think that this follows the absorption of the non-sacred planets and sacred planets into the final synthesizer, and then into the sun. In other words, all the subtle principles of the entire solar system are absorbed into the solar logos, whether this be from Neptune or from Uranus, depending on which planet of the synthesizing planets is the final synthesizer. Well, as I said, we have a long way to go before that happens, but it may be in terms of the outer absorption, not as long as we think, because the outer absorption will take place before the outer solar system disappears, and then there are many years to be experienced in inward cycles of retraction until the consciousness of the solar logos is again focused in its causal body. Right, okay. Now, the moon is the mind and the sun is the understanding. This we discussed, and this was from, I think, from Shankara. The moon is sometimes called the sensorium. It is definitely connected with the brain. Sometimes it is a substitute for the planet Saturn in this case, which is connected with the brain. It is all about concretion. The moon is sometimes placed at the Ajna center. And we realize as well that there is form creation going on at the throat center. It is a form creator, which is what the mind does. And it is, let's say, what we have here is the reflection of higher mind. I want a higher mind. Higher mind. Heavenly man. No, that's it. That's not it. Higher mind in lower mind. The sun is the higher mind, and there are structures on the higher mental plane which are sun-like, and when it comes to the moon, we're still we're dealing with the third aspect. The understanding is the second aspect. In a way, it's the relation between the second and third aspect on the two levels of the mental plane. The Trinity is symbolized by the sun, the central spiritual sun, God the Father. That's the monadic aspect of the solar logos. The heart of the sun, God the Son, is the soul nature of the solar logos, and the physical sun, God the Holy Spirit, and well, let's call this, in a way, the personality of the solar logos. Here we have the soul nature of the solar logos, and here, God the Father, the monadic nature of the solar logos. There's another trinity, of course, connected with the solar logos. Three beings who are the three persons of the solar logos represent the three aspects as well. And these are, well, I suppose you could say they are in a way emanations from the solar logos, but they each have a certain jurisdiction over one of the three aspects, and within them, I believe, how it is, in terms of the so-called great being that contains the planets, I believe they are the great beings who work primarily through the planets. We might say that in this sense that the person representing the Holy Spirit works through Saturn, Mars, and the Earth. Holy Spirit through Saturn, Mars, and the Earth. God the Son works through Uranus, Jupiter, and Venus. Now that much is given, and we're not given the first aspect, but God the Father, the Holy Spirit of the three persons of the Logoic Trinity. I'm going to make a little abbreviation here, and I'll call it three persons of the Logoic Trinity. I'll do it that way. Three persons of the Logoic Trinity. The Holy Spirit of the three persons of the Logoic Trinity may work through Saturn, Mars, and Earth. God the Son of the three persons of the Logoic Trinity. Works through Uranus, Jupiter, and Venus. And the first person, God the Father, the Logoic Trinity, TLT, it will be TLT, and we'll say the Logoic Trinity. Okay, and we'll say God the Father, the first person of the Logoic Trinity, works through, and Neptune, Vulcan, and Pluto. Now, which should be in which position? Neptune is the great bringer of Palaya and dissolution, and connected with Shiva, who is connected with the first ray, although the rays of Neptune are not specifically the first, as far as I can tell. Maybe in some way I don't understand, they may be. Vulcan is connected with the heart of the sun, but also with the first ray, and Pluto definitely with the first ray. Maybe I'll just leave them in that order for the moment. They could be also for Vulcan, Neptune, Pluto. That's possible. Mercury is not included and is, in a sense, everywhere, and brings communication from one aspect to the next. But of course, there are also other planets which will have to be gathered into these three persons of the Trinity. Is the gathering three persons of the Logoic Trinity, or into six, and thence into the Sun? So much depends on what happens with the esoteric Kumaras or the esoteric solar Kumaras. So in a way, the three persons of the Logoic Trinity the three persons, you say, the three persons of the Logoic Trinity are what we would call solar Kumaras. Okay. There are planetary Kumaras and intraplanetary Kumaras. It is the Sun more than in any other heavenly body, i.e. in our solar system, that the unknown power placed the seat of its habitation. What could that unknown power be? And I would suggest, it is the power of Sirius, the power of the cosmic logos, or the power of the one about whom. These are the superior beings who are using our sun as a source of expression. So through our sun, basically, will come the cosmic Christ via Sirius, a great solar plexus energy, I suspect, via the cosmic logos, and a great energy of intelligence through the one about whom not may be said. So much depends on the monadic ray of the one about whom not may be said. I know it seems very far-fetched to look after this, but at least we know that it has both the third ray and the second ray. It gives intelligence and it gives booty. That much we know. It also has great power, but the question is the power simply relative to its status and not relative to its ray? So I think we'll just let that pass. We don't know its stage of evolution by any means. And I don't think we will when we are only now just learning the stage of evolution of our solar logos. Second degree initiate, not yet mentally polarized, and therefore not having taken the third degree. The central spiritual sun is mirrored by the sun. It's a way of saying, another way of saying this is that the personality or even physical body is the the result of the reflection, is a shadow or reflection of the monad. Generally, the body, the sun is the body. And our physical body is the body. The central spiritual sun is the monad of the solar logos. Now remember that term central spiritual sun can be used in relation to the monad of our solar logos. I suppose it could be applied to the monad of the cosmic logos, and it can certainly be applied to the monad of the superconstellational logos of the one about whom naught may be said. Okay. The sun is one of the nine deities that witness all human action. Well, how many deities really are there? At the moment, we have 10 planets and 2 undiscovered. And these are the major planets, the 7 and the 5. At the time of this writing, there was no Pluto, at least among the scientific community. It was not recognized. Perhaps among the initiates it was recognized. There was no Pluto and no Vulcan. So then, there were only 8 planets, and the sun would make 9. So we have to say that these logoi are great observers of all process within them and within the solar system. To varying degrees. Well, if the sun is like a great eye, the eye must see something. So all is measured and judged according to the standard set by the solar logos. Ultimately, so. Well, at least the planets have to, the planetary deities have to judge themselves according to that standard, and we have to judge by the standard of our planetary logoi. So why witness human action? Perhaps to understand how best to evolve, but also to correct human action. The sun was the image of divine intelligence or wisdom. The word soul, sun, was derived from solus, the one or he alone, and the Greek name Helios means most high. Well, in our solar system, Helios is the most high. Sometimes the most high in a planetary sense, is reserved for Sanat Kumara, or maybe even better yet, the planetary logos, but I've heard it used in connection with Sanat Kumara. The sun is illumination, radiance, divine luminosity, and hence wisdom. So, divine luminosity and hence wisdom. So the word, it's and of course, we have this word, I, soul, Asian. So to stand alone and yet somehow pervading all. A great symbol of isolated unity, which is appreciated with reasonable fullness at the fifth initiation, which is a Leonian and solar initiation. So there must be something in this higher type of transfiguration. Which the master experiences, which is akin to the state of consciousness, ST, of S, okay, well, stage of consciousness is what I want, don't I? So I want SG, OC. Okay, STGOC. We'll call that stage of consciousness, not ST, STGOC. Well, I should be able to get that. And we'll call it stage of consciousness. Consciousness, okay. That's good. Which is akin to the stage of consciousness of the solar logos, or at least resonant. It's in the same way, we really don't know what initiation is in the planetary sense until we've taken the transfiguration initiation, so we might say, we don't really know what initiation is in the solar sense until we've taken mastership, which is the solar transfiguration and the Sirian first initiation. So there is this sense of standing apart and yet pervading that is part of the consciousness of the solar logos. Standing apart in apparent isolation, and yet pervading all within the solar system. Okay, the visible sun is only the central star, but not the central spiritual sun. So what this does, it points to the... This points to the... to the monad of the solar logos. And I suppose when you look at the sun, you don't think about its possible spiritual principles, yet alone that they are analogous on a higher turn of the spiral to the spiritual principles of man. Oftentimes there is a closer relation between man and the solar logos than there is between man and the planetary logos. It's as if you have to skip a level in order to get a more exact analogy. Central spiritual sun, used in many ways. Sometimes literally Alcyone, I think the leading star in the Pleiades, perhaps the first ray star in that third ray aggregation. But also closer to home, our own monad is symbolically our central spiritual sun, and the monad of our solar logos, frequently called the central spiritual sun, and related to the heart of the sun. K. The sun was the life-giving and death-giving luminary. Well, you know, if you go to India, you will find the moon reverenced, revered, and not the heat, not the scorching sun. Not that. So the sun can vitalize, but also dehydrate and burn, and can make life in form impossible. Well, in another way, analogously, the soul gives life and sounds the word of death. And the mind repeats that word, organizes itself, and then repeats that word. The waiting form responds and drops away. The soul stands free. So the sun is one of the great symbols for the soul, the supervising deity, the solar angel, and even a symbol for the monad, I would say, which is the center of our being. The sun is the substitute for an invisible intramercurial planet. HBB knew this, and this planet may well be Vulcan, or, because oftentimes we talk about Vulcan veiled by the sun, or yet another intermercurial, intra within, mercurial planet. What is the name? Could it be Adonis? And this I've discussed earlier. It may be that in Charles Jane's book on the undiscovered planets, this planet Adonis was mentioned, and I think Master K.H. in some response mentioned two intra-mercurial planets. Okay. The pure energy of solar intelligence proceeds from the luminous seat occupied by our sun in the center of the heavens, that pure energy being the logos of our system. Well, center of our heavens, but really not the center of the heavens at all, as we know. Solar intelligence, well, there is no higher intelligence. More cosmic than the intelligence of the solar logos. Now, it may be that indeed he is still astrally polarized, but that's on his own high level because he's gone through everything that would make him a planetary logos of whatever degree of intelligence. So the sun is the great symbol of illumination. And that's what we have to achieve when we bring the mind to a certain level of unity. We achieve illumination when we bring the mind to a certain level of unity. Okay. The pure energy of solar intelligence proceeds from the luminous seat occupied by our sun in the center of the heavens. It is a bit of an old-fashioned image, yes, but we can understand that it was what was observed. And the sun is the great intelligent coordinator, organizer of our system. The logos the word which brings all things into correct relationship. There is the Sun of Initiation in a triple form. Two of which are the day sun and one the night sun. Oh, that's rather interesting. I would expect the night sun to be the most powerful, the, so to speak, midnight sun of initiation. That's what I would expect. The day sun, of course, I can think about that. In terms of the houses, I wonder if we can look at the positions of the houses where the sun might appear. I have an idea about this, that sun in first house, first initiation, sun in seventh house, second initiation, sun in 10th house, third initiation, sun in 4th house, 4th initiation. But the night sun is more intimate, more spiritually intimate, and the day sun is more objective. Now I wonder another way of interpreting this. The sun of initiation could relate to the three levels of the human being. The sun of initiation could relate to the three levels of the human being. The personality, the soul, both more of the day, and the monad of the night. We're reminded of the, so to speak, dark light of Shambhala, and really of the monad, which is still darkness to us. Well, there's more to it, and we'd have to talk about what HBB means, and maybe in the context of the paragraphs from which this was taken, more could be said. I don't really have time to go searching, especially since my volume, my three-volume set of The Secret Doctrine, while falling apart, is also about 5,000 or 6,000 miles away. So there's the sun of initiation in a triple form. It reminds of the three periodical vehicles. It reminds of objective and subjective, of less occult and more occult. I'll just leave these thoughts there as they are, knowing that they have not fully grasped what is intended. All initiates are epitomizers of the history of the sun. Well, and that's, who is that? Hercules. Hercules is the sun in all the signs and the labors which arise with each position. Which epitome is another mystery within a mystery? Well, the sun rises, it culminates, it sets, and it reaches the midnight point of deep initiation. Not to say necessarily that when it reaches the, so to speak, Cancer point, that the sign Cancer is the deepest of mysteries, but that position beneath objectivity is the deepest position. So the sun must be it must shine, it must die, it must be buried at the fourth house perhaps, and it must be resurrected again at the Aries point, which correlates with the seventh initiation and the resurrection, which is the name of it, the rising sun after death in the underworld, the rising sun of resurrection after death in the lower worlds. So the sun does not shine undiminished forever. It undergoes a certain cyclic fate. And its light is hidden. Sometimes I'm in the far north where the sun does not shine for a couple of months. It does not rise even. And then comes the day, it's different for each latitude, comes the day and the time when it returns, and once again you see the sun. In the place that I'm talking about, the sun disappears around the 27th of November and returns to visibility around the 17th of January. The mystery of the sun is the grandest of all the innumerable mysteries of occultism. Well, it's the, we might say, the mystery of any being whatsoever. Also, the mystery of being a being, the mystery of being. And it's the mystery of identity within cosmos, alone and yet never alone, or alone and yet all one. Well, you know, we can learn of many entities and come in contact with them. We're trying to come in contact with our own planetary logos. It really only happens with him as the initiator, we're told, at the seventh initiation. And there are greater beings still and greater still. And finally, in our solar system, the solar logos is the highest being in our solar system. And thus, the container of the deepest mysteries. Our first solar initiation happens at the third degree, but it's only when we reach the seventh degree that we are, in a sense, a solar master. At the seventh degree, we are a solar master. Transfigured at the third, well, born at the first, transfigured at the third, a master at the seventh, from the solar perspective. So the sun is the culmination, the sun is the grand totality, at least within our solar system. Perhaps if we venture to another system on the way of higher evolution, if the monad can ever leave the sun, per se, we will find still grander mysteries. We might say that the mystery of Sirius is still grander, but we are not members of that starry system. We are not Sirians, per se, even though we may go there for education and return to our solar system. The sun used to be called the Eye of Jupiter. This we discussed. Plato mentions Jupiter Logos, the Word, or Sun. The Word, these are both second ray sources. And the Word originates with the second ray. It spreads all things out geometrically in space. So it is the word as pattern maker. And the ray of the divine pattern is the second, Jupiter the second, and the sun the second. The intelligence that gives us the divine pattern is contained in the word, which creates the divine pattern, is contained in the word. So let's say that the word gives right systemic relationships. Right systemic relationships. The true color of the sun is blue. Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? We're called here the Blue Logos, and blue is the second ray color. Also related to the sixth ray. So we have a relationship there, the apparently yellow sun, which is deeply blue. The yellow is the fourth ray, and so this deep blueness manifests through the fourth ray. It's a combination, let's just say, a combination expressed by Jupiter and Mercury. Jupiter blue and Mercury yellow. The sun was adopted as a planet by the post-Christian astrologers who had not been initiated, and they thought they saw the sun revolving around the earth. Well, there are all kinds of inferior thought systems. A great danger to humanity is to let the quality of thought decline, because then whatever reality is not properly apprehended. Illusions are formed. They are pursued with strong emotion, and action is taken on the physical plane based upon glamorized illusions. And then, of course, progress is stopped. This self, the highest, the one and universal, was symbolized on the plane of mortals by the sun, its life-giving effulgence being in its turn the emblem of the soul, killing the terrestrial passions, you might say, in this case, the sun killing Mars, which have ever been an impediment to the reunion of the unit self, the spirit, with the all self, the oversoul or the overself. Hence the allegorical mystery. It was enacted by the sons of the fire mist and of light. And these are particular types of monads. The sons of the fire mist. The fire mist is related to the sea of fire on the logoric plane, that plane ruled by Leo, hence, in a way, by the sun, which is veiling what? Veiling Uranus, veiling Vulcan, veiling at different times both of them. So when we want to discover the one self, the sun is the great symbol for it, the one self of cosmos. When we want to discover the one self of cosmos, the sun is our symbol, but not necessarily for the absolute self, the symbol for which might more be darkness than any point of light. The absolute self is, I use this word, pointless, and the sun is a point. So we cannot discern any being within absoluteness. We can only discern, well, we can't discern anything really, but we can only imagine that its nature is such as to include all points and there and any possible development of any point forever. So we can say that to the absolute, nothing can be added or subtracted. It can be in no way improved or diminished. It is, in fact, absolute, incapable of change, and yet the origin of all change. So the sun is not really a great symbol for it, but of the universal logos, the sun is a fine symbol. And frankly, we are attempting to achieve, we call it solarization, which means a condition of enlightenment, intelligence, power, magnetism, all the things we imagine the sun to be, and even learn that the sun is. We are on our way from being tiny little clods of clay to being a source of radiance, a tiny little sun reflective of the great sun, even as it is reflective of still far greater suns. We have no conception of what lies in the universe and what awaits us in the universe. Literally no idea beyond a certain point. Well, let us see. This looks like it's Uranus. Uranus was known by the ancients under another name. Well, this is the mystery planet, but still perhaps another name. Uranus, Uranos. Chronos time is represented as mutilating Uranus. Absolute time is made to become finite and conditioned. And she does use the term absolute time, and not only absolute duration. Rendered partial. We might say that Uranos is rendered partial, finite, subject to causes, whereas we might say that true reality is the cause only of itself. And we can't even speak in really in terms of causality because there were no preconditions. There were no preconditions to absolute reality. It must be the one ever abiding, substanding, and the only, really, the only what, can't say thing, excuse me, but the only that ever is. Among the three secret orbs or star angels, well, this is interesting. Uranus was not included, and earlier it tells us, that Neptune was not included. So, what are the secret star angels? Do the secret orbs relate to the three persons of the Logoic Trinity? Because it seems that the heavenly one, Uranus, should have been included. It was one of the secret planets, or how did it go? It was an occult planet, and it was understood to exist by the initiates. So it's a little surprising to the three secret orbs. Are these orbs that are planetary orbs, or are they superplanetary, like the three persons of the Trinity, ever hidden and containing other planetary orbs? Uranus personified all the creative powers and is synonymous with Cronus. Well, Cronus is time. So what kind of time are we discussing? Because the old saying that eternity breaks the scythe of Saturn in two. So ends the absolute duration divides absolute duration. We can see the creative powers. There is a strong ray 3 in Uranus, and ray 7 is one of the two, what DK calls practically artistic rays. And so there, there's always, with Uranus, always recourse to originality or finding the pattern of one's origin and attempting to bring it out, will to express. Ray 7 and the will to express and Uranus. But this, what does Cronus do? Is not Cronus Father Time? Is Cronus something more? Uranus, well, I'll say something a little strange. Uranus renders all time simultaneous, thus it doesn't really create, but thus revealing the eternal now. So if I want a planet that will give me the end of sequence and will collapse all that has ever been into the present moment, which is ever-present, the ever-present moment, let's call it that, collapsing all that has ever been or will be into the ever-present moment, I will search for Uranus to be my guide. So we still have to solve what HPB means by synonymous with Cronus. We could look Cronus up. I do believe it's equivalent to time. Let's see. Cronus. Cronus. What does he do? He is a Titan. Aha! There we go, not to be confused with Cronos, the personification of time. That disambiguation is good. Okay, good. So, we see, not to be confused with Cronos, the personification of time. Okay. Well, this will give a different point of view. In most classic is well-known and well-known version of Greek mythology, Cronus or Kronos, was the leader and the youngest of the first generation of Titans, divine descendants of Gaia, the Earth, and Uranus. Well, but then is Cronus really Uranus, the sky? He overthrew his father and ruled the mythological golden age until he was overthrown by his own son, Zeus, and was imprisoned in Tartarus. Cronus is usually depicted with a sickle or a scythe, which was also the instrument he used to castrate and depose Uranus. Well, this is very Saturnian, his father. In Athens, on the 12th day of the Attic month of the Hecatombeon, the festival called Cronia was held in honor of Cronus to celebrate the harvest, suggesting that as a result of his association with the virtuous golden age, Cronus continued to reside as the patron of the harvest. Well, this is not working. It may say that he is not to be confused with Cronos, or time, but he comes very close to being Saturn, does he not? I think so. I'll see whether we can copy this, but the example is not good, because we find Cronus very close to Saturn. Okay. I think we can, we don't have to have all of these references, do we? We just have to say that he's not to be confused. Yeah, it's very much like Saturn. And the parents are Gaia and Uranus. So why should Cronus be the same as his father? It doesn't seem that it's correct. Okay. Well, we've spoken of time, anyway. And how there's the difference between sequence and simultaneity. In the state of isolated unity or the eternal now, we have managed to be in such a state of consciousness that the forever going sequence of events in consciousness are seen simultaneously and as if there was no movement. It's something I think one has to meditate on for years, maybe lives. It is to grasp the one being and the eternal now simultaneously. And it is the pearl of great price. It is the philosopher's stone. It is the realization that eventually we have to seek when we are tired of having sought any particular content. Why not have the origin of the all? Well, why not have the all as the origin of everything? Or why not be the all as the origin of everything rather than seek after any one particular? Why not? Okay. Uranus was unknown by the ancients, unknown to the ancients. Well, maybe yes, maybe no. Let's see. Let's see about that. I think a deep study of Greek mythology, even though it's been a bit messed, is something that we really have to undertake. Because it's probably more accessible to us than Hindu mythology. I wonder if Hindu mythology is more accurate in some way. In any case, we have to undertake it so as for the hints that it will give concerning the interplay of all the astrological, astronomical factors. Uranus was unknown to the ancients, and they were forced to reckon the sun amongst the planets, dot, dot, dot. But why? Why? Because the sun is a blind for Uranus. Uranus is a modern name, but one thing is certain. The ancients had a mystery planet, which they never named. This seventh planet was not the sun, but the hidden divine Hierophant. Well, Uranus is always connected with the Hierophant, and Sanakmara is Uranus at the third initiation. But how can Uranus be a mystery planet when here we have something said that among the secret orbs of star angels, Uranus was not included? Uranus was unknown. It is a star angel. It's very powerful. Why then was it not included? Well, if we were having those meetings of the Theosophical Lodge with HPB, she might have explained this fact. I understand that recently the transactions of those lodge, of that lodge in some hundreds of pages have now been released. What? 130 years later? Uranus is a modern name, but they had a mystery planet. Was it the seventh planet? Well, in what way? Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter? Try again. Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus. There we go. The seventh planet. And let's say not counting Vulcan. And the Hierophant, in this case, we can consider the Logos of Uranus as the Hierophant. And those other, the other lesser Hierophants which confer the realization, okay, RZT, the realization of oneness are all reflections of Uranus as the Hierophant. And RZTS, realizations, don't you think? RZTS, realizations. Okay. Uranus is now being stimulated. This we learned earlier. It is systemic or solar. Solar Kundalini is now stimulating Earth, Saturn, and Uranus, all so much involved in the Earth drama, the coming to birth of Earth, and the arising of Venus as well. There are many connections here. Earth is within that greater third ray being in which Saturn is the mental body, and Earth has the same monadic ray as Uranus, and they both may have the same personality ray, the third. Uranus and Earth have certain ray similarities, I would say. The soul ray is different. But we may well have, we certainly have the same monadic ray, that's clear. It's the home of electric fire, and Earth has the first ray monad, so there you have a non-sacred planet and a sacred planet with the same monadic ray. Ray 7 is there, but Ray 3 is prominent in Uranus, and if it's so prominent, it may well give us the third ray in terms of ingenious creative intelligence, and the third ray is the personality ray of the Earth. So they have certain ray similarities, definitely monad, and perhaps personality. It's being stimulated, and with respect to the Earth, certainly it's going to be very powerful. Because we have the age of Aquarius, the seventh ray coming in, so powerful for Earth now. Seventh ray age, connecting to Uranus, and Aquarius, age of Aquarius, connecting to Uranus. Uranus is the most powerful ruler in Aquarius because it's one of the veiled hierarchical rulers and also the orthodox ruler. Well, there we go. Running over it again. But let's just say that this will be the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure. Number 158A. Page 671. And beginning, Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 158B, page 671, almost 672, I say for my own encouragement.